Welcome to the D Word, the UK's only weekly internet radio show that talks dementia, with me, your host, Peter Hill. Welcome along to the D Word. Good to have you company here on UK Health Radio. This week my guest is Christopher Hall, who never really set out to be an author, but has now found himself with a series of best-selling books on social issues, including the Forget-Me-Not Chronicles and The Last Train Home, which are both based around dementia. Chris will be joining me right after this from Martha. Martha and Last Time Last, kicking off this week's edition of The D Word, well, my guest is author Christopher Hall. Chris, it's great to welcome you as my guest here on The D Word. Want to be talking about the books, The Forget-Me-Not Chronicles and The Last Train at Home, but before we do that, little bit about yourself. I mean, writing is not something that you've set out to do, am I right?
Not at all, no. It's always something I had in the back of my mind that I would like to give it a go. And I tried a couple of times, but nothing serious. And then I do a lot of project work. And one of the projects that I was doing was on dementia. And my wife had cancer. So I was giving up the studio, like photography studio, and came home to work from home. And I just needed something quiet to do while she was sleeping or resting, and decided I'd give it a go, and just started writing this book and put it all together. And then one day it was like, got it printed on Amazon and then handed it to her and went, "What do you think of this?" She looked at it, went, "You give me a book." And then she realized it was my book that I'd written it. So, and that's pretty much how it started. So I didn't think anything would really come of it. It was just more for myself, just to prove that I could do it. Because at school, I was one of those ones that kind of attended when I wanted to, and I went through a few problems there. And I might, if you told me my English teacher back then that I was going to write a book, he'd probably just laughed at me. But yeah, so.
Well,
That's how it started.
they do say everybody's got a book in them, don't they? But it obviously takes a bit to get it out and put it on paper. Now, in terms of what the stories you are telling, I mean, obviously we're a dementia show, so that's kind of a main focus of interest. And I know you look at social aspects and social things. I mean, where does a kind of dementia link come from?
Well, the dementia link was because I was working on a dementia project. The idea was that the challenge I'd kind of set myself was for each project that I was doing, I'd write a book that goes with it. So hence you've got dementia ones, you've got one on addiction, and you've got one on volunteering. The big projects on that one. But the dementia one seemed to have picked up, so that's why I've written a second book for that one. I've got a few ideas that I might do some more on that as well. But yes, it was originally because the projects I was involved with. But I'm kind of like now got ideas for other aspects, pretty much from my own background and things, because I spent 2 years living on the streets, so there's lots of stories that can come from there. So I've gone through quite a few different things, and so I've got history of dementia in my own family, friends whose parents have had dementia, bits pieces like that. And so I've got my own background of the homelessness, addictions, that I can write about there, and you pick up a lot of stories there. And I've just spoken to hundreds of people over the last few years, and but also throughout my life, I've had these conversations, and I've kind of stored snippets of these conversations in my mind, and thinking they will one day, like each one of them could be their own story kind of thing. So yeah.
And it's, I've had on your website, which is excellent, by the way. And there's kind of lines on there. I mean, stories that don't look away. I mean, these are not easy subjects to deal with, are they?
Some of them aren't easy, no. Some of them are very hard hitting. I must admit, I'm working on I've just started a new project now, to do with sexual abuse. And I kind of got from the onset that that one's going to be a really hard hitting project. When the organisation I'm working with has laid on a counsellor for me to actually speak to whenever I need it. They've literally gone, here's a telephone number. Just whenever you want it, just call this number and somebody will be there. Yeah, so I knew that was
Yeah, that's definitely when you've got a hard-hitting story, obviously, when that kind of thing happens. And the other thing is, you say you're not interested in shock or spectacle, but with some of the things that you're dealing with, people can stray into that territory, unfortunately, can't they?
And but a lot of what we see is not the full story. I'll use homelessness as an example, because that's an easy one for me to talk about. In the fact that whenever you if I'm talking at events and things like this, I'll quite often come up with something like this, is that when you speak about think of a homeless person, generally the first thing that people will think of is the person you see on the street, like sleeping in the shop doorway, things like that. And how would you feel if I told you that was only 10% of the homeless population?
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah. Shocked, I
and
think, is
yeah,
firstly. Yeah.
and but the rest of it you don't hear about.
Yeah.
So how do I raise awareness of that, and not just with homelessness, with other subjects as well. It's not just for the dementia, it's not just the person with dementia, it's everybody else around it that gets affected as well. And how do I bring that into it? And do that. So yeah, it's not, it's trying to get the whole picture across, in not a hard-hitting way. My people get bombarded with images, they get bombarded with stats all the time. How do you get that across in a way that isn't, doesn't feel like somebody's trying to shove something down their throat? And so I've kind of got this style myself, which is a bit more humorous, a bit more light-hearted. And I know it's not a funny subject, but how do I get that in a way that will actually get people to look at it differently?
Yeah, that's a real skill, because people think of humour, particularly in terms of dementia, and a lot of people shy away. So they can't use humour because it's a very dark subject. But I think I read something else on your website, which is humour's how people survive all those dark places. So it's not something to be ignored.
No, yeah, it's a way, it's just an easy way of putting it across in a different format that allows people to get into it. And I've had the comments about from people saying, dementia's not funny, you shouldn't be doing this. And then I've said, have you actually tried reading the book? And they come back after and say, yeah, actually it did help. And it also has carers and things like that. I've had one group of carers, they've actually come back and they're saying they've actually bought a few books actually as training for their people coming out of community caring. So it does actually help. It just gets that message across. So
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I managed activity groups for people living with dementia in the community for 2 years, and I heard some of the best one-liners I've ever heard, I think, in those groups, and so much laughter and smiling. So, that's a proof. The other thing that's really interesting about your two books on dementia, the Forget-Me-Not Chronicles and The Last Train Home, looking at the two main characters, they are totally different in terms of what happens, and their kind of characters. And going back to what you said sort of a little bit earlier in this conversation, everybody's view of someone with dementia is fairly stock and standard, whereas the saying says, you met one person with dementia, you've met one person with dementia.
So the first one, Maggie, was actually a combination of different people that I'd spoken to. For The Last Train Home, it was actually the inspiration behind the character was somebody that I knew when I was a kid. And I was doing a school project on the local railway, or it's like, what is disused railway lines? What was it like at the time? And it worked out that one of our neighbours actually worked on that line. And it might he had dementia and he couldn't remember some things, but as soon as we got talking about that, he actually wrote down, you know, there's like A5 notebooks. He must have completed about three or four of those, all with notes on it. He just knew it straight off. He could remember that, but other things he just forgot. So that was kind of the inspiration behind that character. And yeah, there will be. I want to get, and so it's not just about the main character as well. It's about the background characters. Martin, Forget Not Chronicles. You've got Tom there, who's there, and then in the other one, it's how you juggle a family and caring for somebody with dementia and making that smart some of the decisions you have to. I almost gave it away then. Making some of the decisions that you have to make. But I've met people who have got what to call it, young onset dementia. So it's getting across. I want to try and work out a way of doing a different character there, who and how you cope with it when you are younger. How do you cope with it when you're in your 20s? Is something you've got in mind for a character? It's like how does that help? How does that come about? What do you do then? And also, another idea is to going back to where you worked. There are some restrictions there, and what happens if that person gets dementia? What happens to that person? And I'll give away a little bit about this one because I haven't even started writing it yet. And it would be a spy story.
Okay.
And the person that I've got in mind for this one, and it actually comes from a true story, is the person that actually worked for MI6. And if that person starts saying about some of the things that she was doing, she's got no recollection of what she's saying or anything like that, but she's actually giving away official secrets. What happens in that situation?
Wow. I'll tell you what, in 320 odd episodes, that's one I've never thought of. So yeah, I think you've opened up a small can of worms
Yeah,
there.
but it's a true story that I came across, and I came away and I was thinking, what happened? And I don't think anybody really knows what would happen in that situation. How do you deal with that one?
Yeah, I think there are so many unknowns in those areas. And just, you're saying the supporting characters. I mean, Tom's in this situation where, I don't want to give the whole thing away. I want people to, obviously, you can't buy the book, but, he's in a situation that is very common amongst carers that the other sibling is away. And so he's doing, the majority of it. And obviously you get the relationship then between the siblings. And that's a pretty common one. It doesn't really have to be that many miles away either. And I think that's brought out. And looking at Last Train at Home, you've got a member of what's called the sandwich generation, which is trying to manage an aging parent, kids, and you're stuck right in the middle.
And so it's not just that what the story I was trying to tell wasn't about so much about the actual main character. It was about the actual family side of it.
Yeah, because it's changing relationships, it's learning to speak another language to actually, communicate and all these things. If you can bring all those together, I mean, from a is it from a from an author's point of view, if someone gave you all of that and said, we want a story on changing relationships, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, would you think, well, hey, that's great, or that's going to be really difficult?
If somebody had put it to me like that, I'd have gone, I don't know where to start. But when you start with an idea and then you speak to people, and so in each of the book there is sort of like an underlying bit of advice on how to handle situations as well, and how to cope with it, not just from the main characters and things like that, but if you're supporting that main character, what to do. That sort of advice came from professionals that said that. So I've got this list of all the like do's and don'ts there. So I try and feed them into it as well. So it's not just about this story and trying to make it trying to get the message across, trying to make it funny. There's also an underlying bit of how to handle certain situations.
And
Yeah.
I guess that's important that people read. And, I think what you said right at the beginning, everybody gets bombarded with facts and thrown textbooks and things like that.
Yeah.
But, from school, well, you don't take it all in. Of course you don't. But
No.
if you can read a novel, that actually makes you think, wait a minute, I could do that, or that applies to me
Yeah.
or real life. I think that's a lot better than textbooks and all that type of education.
Yeah. And there is that bit of, and I can understand why organizations do it. The organizations that come out, you see it every year. You get the hard-hitting adverts coming out on telly to like asking for donations, and they will feed you the stereotypical bit of it. But we need to get the message out there about the everything else that's there. It's not just that bit there. How do we break that barrier down and put everything else across there? And this is just, there's probably hundreds of different ways. I'm not going to say how to do it, but how do you get that message across? And this is just a way that I've found. So I do other things as well. So we did like the exhibitions and stuff that went out. And there was a books, I can't remember whether the book went with that exhibition or not, but off the top of my head now. But there's that the exhibitions that went out, and it got picked up by organizations and things like that, and the cathedral put it on, things. So it's that bit of it, but then how else could I do that? And this was the way that I found.
My feet are tread upon
Nancy Griffith and Not My Way Home. Plans are being made for the 2026 UK Health Radio Awards. There are a number of health-related categories, and I'm delighted to say they include the Wendy Mitchell Award for Dementia Support. Voting for the awards will run throughout the month of October. I'll be telling you about the nominees for the Wendy Mitchell Award next month. Back to my guest now, Christopher Hall. Yeah, because, you know, Moments That Remain, I've looked at it, and there are some amazing stories there.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're stories that need to get out because they're real-life stories by real-life people. And in a way, they're all different as well, which, you know, bails out what we've been talking about. It's, you know, everything is not the same.
Yeah, and again, these are some of the people that I spoke to. And obviously, I didn't put all of the stories on there, but I just hammocked a few of them. But yeah, I went through and did some of the stories on there. And there was some. I met some brilliant people doing it as well.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, the interesting thing and the skill in it is that if someone reads one of your novels and they recognise themselves in a way, but they don't recognise themselves in a way that everybody's thinking, oh, that was you.
There's certainly, from the feedback I've got, some people can read some of the characters into themselves. Which is really good, and I've had quite a few people come back and say, "Oh, that bit's me. Right, that's happening at the moment. So it's really poignant to me." So it's like, yeah, he's getting those different, to put it, levels of how the stages of progression, and people can relate to some sections of it. So yeah.
And it is, you know, dementia is a journey as well. And you have to carry that journey along with your book, don't you? You know, because it's not something, I don't know, I'd be fascinated about some other type of illness that doesn't really progress in the manner that you get with dementia. So, you know, chapter 6 is a lot different to chapter 1 if you're doing it chronologically.
Yeah, definitely. But it's that gradual build up of it, really, and just following it through to a certain stage. Yeah.
And in, you know, talking to the people that you have talked to for the project, are people really wanting to get their stories out there?
Yeah, I think so. And it's either they want to get the stories out there, or they just want to be heard. They speak to a lot of professionals and things that just going, like, filling out forms or looking on websites, bits like that. So it keeps giving, when I'm going out there and talking to people, that I think they're appreciating the point of putting their voice across and being heard, gives them that bit of value back and things. So yeah, so certainly the people who are looking after people, it's them having the opportunity to say things, and hopefully there are sometimes things that come up and we can just stick them into it. It might help make some changes there. Like it's bits with, like, dealing with doctors and how can that be done and things like that. And can that be changed in any way or made easier, or trying to get other bits and pieces where you're just directed to a website? Can we make that easier? If we can just get people seeing those bits and more people reporting the bits, how can we do that?
It's those kind of moments. I think you describe them as those quiet moments, but it's the ones that are really vital. And talking, when you get involved with the medical professionals, first of all, you've got the jargon barrier to overcome, that they're, you know, sometimes talking a different language. And also involved in that world, it is those little social elements that often get missed. And that, you know, that's what I think you bring out in your books, and particularly in the Moments That Remain projects. And they're so, so important.
And those sort of things are so important, not just for the person with dementia actually going to them, like dementia cafes and things like that, but they're also just so important. Sorry, excuse me a minute. Yeah. For the person who actually is taking them or looking at their carer. a family member or whatever, as might they might be going over, only going over there for an hour or 2 hours. That's an hour, 2 hours of like semi-respite for them. It's a bit of time when they can just actually just take a moment for themselves and chat to other people and things. So yeah.
And it is really it's a team approach, I think, probably more than any other, can't think of that many diseases we have a real team approach between carer and person living with dementia because they're both vital to each other. And sometimes it's the carers that forget to look after themselves because they're so focused on looking after their loved one.
And some of them actually feel obliged or forced into it, and there can that be that little bit begrudging, but they do it for the dignity of the person, which is quite hard hitting. And so they're giving up a lot more. It's not just a case of caring for somebody, it's also what they're choosing to do, that to give up what they were doing to do that. So there is that bit of regret for want of a better way of doing it, or there's another word I can't think of at the moment, of that bit of where they actually know that they've given something up, that they've been building up to something all the time, and they've had to just give that up to actually care for this person, but they'd rather be caring for that person and keep that person's dignity, but they have that bit of remorse against them for that.
And I guess the other thing with carers as well, I think you said you're right about ordinary people, flawed, tired, stubborn, and funny, which all of us are, and everybody is. But carers often worry that they're making a mistake, but don't realise that no one is 100% perfect, and they are going to make errors. That's another important point to get across that you're not
And
right, you're not writing about perfectly shiny people who do 100% the right
no.
thing.
No, and the thing I actually found with dementia is the fact that you might think that you understand somebody and be able to cope with all these different situations, but you go in there a different day, and that could be totally different. I knew a lady, and I was kind of like adopted by the family, and if I went in there and called her by a name, she didn't have a clue who I was. But if I went in there and called a nan, we'd sit there for like an hour chatting about work and everything else and what I've been doing that week. But there's that little trigger. If I hadn't, if I even if I said her name and then corrected it into nan, it didn't work. I had to do nan straight away for it to work. But so yeah.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I would have laughed at us back when we sat around drinking rent money like there was more coming. Three sheets to the wind, three chords for anyone who would listen. Swore that they were wrong if they didn't get it. Just trying to catch a big break, turning every heartache into a song. Staying up too late, wake up with a headache, hair of the dog, trying to belong. And all that mattered was trading new songs with my friends. I knew now what I knew then. All we needed to celebrate was a Friday and some cheap champagne. Man, those were the days. Cruising down Music Road, singing with the windows rolled down, dreaming that the radio was playing what's on my phone now. Just trying to catch a big break, turning every heartache into a song. Taking turns driving from Nashville to Austin to rolling at dawn. Keep moving along, cause all that mattered is breaking even to pay the band. If I knew now what I knew then. Back when we sat around saying we'd be something, yeah, we're still running. Just trying to catch a big break, turning every heartache into a song. Calling home too late to talk about the best day, cause I knew that mom was cheering me on. And if all that mattered was getting this far to start again, yeah, I'd do it again. If I knew now what I knew then.
Tyler Dial, If I Knew Now What I Knew Then. Always good to hear from you on the show. We're on all the social media platforms as Radio TDW, and the email is tdwradio@gmail.com. Back to my guest now, Christopher Hall.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, I mean, you must have learned a heck of a lot in all your research that you've done, and the people you said, you know, earlier, the amazing people that you've spoken to.
Yeah, there was quite a lot came out of it. And I was working with Hertfordshire Council at the time, so I did actually do a report that went back to them about the findings and things like that. So hopefully that might make a few changes as well.
Yeah, I think it's just keeping chipping away, and eventually the wall will break down. But for some people, it's a very long process. You know, if you widen it out, we don't have a dementia strategy still.
Yeah.
In this country, and despite a lot of, you know, I've got international listeners, a lot of other countries have. So you have to keep raising these things. But I think what you have to do as well is exactly what you're doing. You have to arrange them in different formats, because otherwise people just get bored and say, oh, that again.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just how else can I do it? And what else can I do that helps? And hopefully helps.
Yeah. And I think also the strength that you're using is real people, real lives and real stories.
Mm. Yeah. They're not actual true stories, but they are based on from real events. So it's that bit there of they are quite either this bits there that I might be taking 10 different conversations and putting it into one book, or the character might be based on something, but I've taken situations from something else that I've put in there. So but yeah, it's not all fiction.
Yeah, you know,
but it's not a true story, but it's based on real life.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, and I think you said somewhere, I think I've got a quote that you say, if a reader finishes one of my books feeling recognised, understood, or a little less alone, then it's all been worth it. And that's what it's all about.
Yeah, and my project work, I started off thinking if I could help one person, it's done its job. I think so far we've gone well above the one person now. So there's been quite a few different people that have been helped, or in either from taking part in the projects or seeing the projects. So hopefully we've gone beyond that one person now.
Yeah, I'm sure you've got a lot of positive. Yeah, I've seen your feedback on Amazon, which is really great. And I'm sure you've had a lot of face-to-face positive feedback as well.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. So it's yeah, but through all of my projects, I've had some real good comments and things, and some quite hard-hitting ones that came back that weren't negative, but it was like, oh yeah, that helped in a way that I didn't actually expect it to help, kind of thing. So yeah.
Yeah, and it's so multifaceted. I mean, that's the whole thing with dementia as a subject, that you think you've learned one little bit and then realise you just scratched the surface.
Yeah, I know. You're never gonna know all of it. It's like, really? Yeah, if you think you know all of it, you can just start again. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think your young onset idea is a very good one. What I'm told by my friends who are living with dementia is they say when you go and get a diagnosis, then the word "don't" is the word which is used most. Don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, don't do that, can't do this, can't do that. And there isn't any form of, well, actually, you can still do this, or you can still do that, or you might even learn a new skill.
By all means, like, do this, do that, and it's like, or you can do this. I'm like, and here's how you could do it. It's like you can carry on doing that, but have you tried this? It'll help you. Not the don't, because people don't like don't.
Yeah, not at all. I mean, if you had medical professionals who've read your books or with the project, I should be interested in their responses.
Well, I say I've got a few care homes that said that they're going to be using it as training material. So I thought that was quite positive feedback from it. So yeah, one of the first people that read the book, even before it's published, she was a professional in the field. So yeah.
It's very important to get those people on board and to get that kind of feedback because we're in this kind of world where everything gets evaluated, doesn't it? And you can look at stuff. People used to ask me about my groups every week. Your evaluation. Well, I get 16 people who come in and they leave laughing with a smile on their face. So, but how do you empirically measure that, you know?
There are some of these things some of the projects I do are actually funded, and they're going, but or you're trying to get funding for it, and they're going, right, what evaluation do you think you can do it? Like, how are you supposed to do that then? Just what do you want to know? Like, how many people are going to benefit? I think, well, I can interview 100 people, but then again, 100,000 people might see it. What happens then? And like, how many people are we saying have benefited from it? Are we saying the 100 people that took part in it, or the everybody else has seen it? And it's like,
You've got the books, you've got the projects. Obviously, you've got your living to make as well, wedding photographer and all of that stuff. Do you find this kind of taking over a bit, or?
Sometimes I do, but sometimes I also find it a bit relaxing to do. So it's a good thing and a bad thing sometimes. It's like, oh, well, I've got to get this done. But the worst one is when I'm starting doing something, writing something, and then I've got an idea for something else. I'm going, I want to get that on the finish now. I want to start on the next one.
Yeah, I suppose that's the discipline bit, isn't it? I think that I've always got ideas for certain things and think, well, I've actually got to finish what I'm doing before I spark off on that spiral. But it's been fascinating, Chris. Thank you so much for being the guest, and I would
Brilliant.
obviously urge everybody to go out and buy the books. And, you know, I think you're doing a really important thing, because I think anyone that can bring forwards, you know, the real life things about dementia, and not always the dark stuff, but, you know, a balance, I think, is really important.
Yeah. So definitely, yeah, it's just getting that balance where you can see things from a different way. So yeah.
Absolutely. Well, keep on doing what you're doing. And
thank you very much.
As far as the books are concerned, I guess it's from all reputable booksellers, Amazon and everything else, is it?
Well, primarily on Amazon, but okay. From what I'm being told, if you're going to like Waterstones or anywhere like that, they can order it in. Cool. And the more people that ask for it, will mean they'll probably start stocking it. So, but they don't stock it straight away. But yeah.
Right. Get in there and ask for it. Okay. Yeah. Chris, thanks so much for being my guest.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Thanks to Chris, and I wish him every success with his writing. The books, The Forget-Me-Not Chronicles and The Last Train Home, are out now and available from Amazon and other major booksellers. And do take a look at Chris's website, which is christopherjameshall.co.uk. That's all for this week. Thanks to Angela, my production assistant. Next week, I'm going to be talking about dementia and learning disabilities with dementia nurse Neil Olingshig. So until then, thanks for listening and take care now.